Today on Movie Wallahs, a few more streaming picks from our time in lockdown. It's time for Movie Wallahs. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Wallahs is a weekly list of film reviews, movie news, or general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or on the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Hello.
Gosh, hello. Joe had a bit of Yazdi and Rashmi-itis there with the beginning.
I know.
I was going to edit that out.
Well, you can, but I'm just saying, I've never heard you stumble.
I might pop it into the back end of the podcast, isn't that take?
Into the back of the aeroplane.
It's the first. I've never seen that happen. Yeah.
And what we're talking about is I tripped over my words during that intro. So what you actually heard in this podcast was take two, but
I think it was take three. Actually, I think it was take three.
You're really throwing me under the bus today. I'm trying to make out like we are a professional outfit with professional recording, with professional presenters, and we are none of that, clearly.
Well, it is. It is, because the edited version is good.
Plus, this is our 400 and what podcast episode.
We can't we're up there now. We're up there. I think, I can't recall. I think we're at episode 460, close, pushing 470. Over 10 years of Movie Wallahs. I don't think we ever did a formal celebration.
Right?
Yeah.
Wow.
We started this in 2010, I believe, with Up in the Air and Avatar, I think, is our very first podcast. And it's actually, when you talk about Amateur Hour, I went back and listened to a couple of the early ones just because I was sorting out some space on my hard drive. And yeah, we've come a long way, baby. The first ones, I think, it very much felt like work teleconferences. We hadn't figured out quite how to talk about movies.
Vibe with each other.
Well, I think we were too busy reading extensive notes, pre-written notes that we had written, rather than actually talking about movies, which
I have to say, it doesn't feel like 10 years, and I still enjoy talking movies with you both.
Likewise. It's often the highlight of my week. I look forward to it.
Us too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the editing's gotten a lot easier because we can actually...
now we just talk about our mistakes and celebrate them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
All right.
What is that thing? What is the Japanese concept? It's wagyu wagyu or something, but it means essentially anything that you create is of no value if it's perfect.
Oh, I like
it's
that.
It's the imperfections which make it special and which gives your stamp on it.
There's an irony to that being a Japanese saying.
I know.
Yes,
because
I
if
agree.
Any culture celebrates perfectionism more than the Japanese, I'd be surprised.
Well, I mean, like when they make their pottery, the Japanese pottery, they, if it's perfect, then it almost has no value. They want it to have some little kink in it or what have you.
Well, no, I understand that, but it's funny because, you know, I used to work with colleagues in Japan, and you know, there's a little interesting anecdote, you know, when a US company makes, you know, 1,000 light bulbs, the typical expectation from the customer is that, you know, a handful of those light bulbs won't work. You know, when a Japanese company delivers 1,000 light bulbs, all 1,000 are perfect, tested, prime examples. They don't deal with error rates, or at least they didn't used to culturally in the same way that we approached it. So anyway,
it's called Wabi Sabi. And it's a worldview centered on the acceptance of transience and imperfection.
Oh, I like it. And I just heard about that recently. Maybe you were telling me about it, Yazdi. Wabi sabi, not wagyu wagyu, which is very good beef.
Yes.
Or wasabi, which is a delicious accompaniment to sushi.
Correct.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Wabi-sabi. Move us on, Joe.
We can move on, yes.
So, really, this episode is just, you know, we continue to be contained within our homes. We continue to, be adapting to this kind of new world order, so to speak. And we've been watching lots of stuff on streaming, primarily Netflix, as well as Amazon Prime, YouTube as well. Yes, you're going to throw in a couple of mentions there. We were, as a result of lockdown, you know, very keen to start covering stuff a little bit more formally for Netflix than we have done in the past. So Rashmi has done her thing, and we're now able to access some Netflix early releases. So hopefully, as the weeks and months go on, we can get you some information ahead of time about what's coming to Netflix of stuff that we haven't, that you haven't seen yet. So that's kind of an area of development for us, and hopefully that will be a good service to you, the listeners. So with that said, I figure there's a list here in front of me of stuff to talk about. Let's just have at it in whatever order. I think, Rashmi, you've seen a couple of Netflix pre-releases. Maybe we should start there. So, sure. You want to go for it?
Sure. So the two that are coming to your screens actually end of May, the last week in May, the series Space Force, which has an incredible cast, including Steve Carell and John Malkovich, Lisa Kudrow's here, a few others. And then there is another docu-series coming, which is Filthy Rich Jeffrey Epstein. So let me cover Space Force first. So Space Force comes out on May the 29th. It's a 10-episode series, I'll call it, limited release series. Look, this has got a great cast, including the late Fred Willard, who unfortunately we lost, I think, last week. Big loss. So I'll start by saying, you know, this is something that's quirky and silly. It seems to get funnier as the episodes go along. And it feels like it should be the funny West Wing in space. The problem I have with it is that it's a little bit underwritten. It's satirical and funny, but for me, it's not bitey enough. You know, I really like a lot of bite and crunch in my satirical shows. And so even though there are some really funny laugh out loud moments, it feels a little tonally inconsistent. So I would say that I like the fact that for the first three episodes, it's literally continuous. The shows are fairly easy to watch. They're about 30 to 40 minutes per episode. And it's fun. It's fun. I think it's just not as great as I was expecting, given the incredible cast in here. However, I will say John Malkovich, as always, is exceptional.
Huh. I'm a little surprised. I had high hopes for this.
Me too, Yasti.
Is the issue that it's a one joke premise, which doesn't really make it past the joke?
Yeah, I almost feel like this would benefit from being a regular SNL skit than a fully formed, you know, 30-something minute bunch of episodes. I think this could have been efficiently told in, you know, 5 episodes. Instead, it's 10, and they don't feel super compelling.
Yeah, I didn't watch this formally, so this isn't any kind of an official take from me. But
this
is
Joe's over the shoulder, right? This is your over the shoulder review.
I was present, dipping in and out as Rashmi was kind of working her way through the episodes, which I might add, you did kind of chew through quite quickly. So there's definitely something there,
correct?
Because you know you would readily kind of bail on something that you found insufferable. So. From what I saw, this seems to be it's attempting to be political satire, and I feel like it's very heavily, you know, poking fun at this notion of a space force, as was recently in the past, you know, couple of, you know, years or months, has been, you know, promoted heavily by the current administration. So in many ways, it's trying to point at what they perceive to be the ridiculousness of us undertaking this type of things when there are many problems to solve on the ground. But, you know, I think it also nicely balances that out with this notion that, you know, there was a space program and it did many good things for the United States. And, you know, there was a scene I saw in particular based in a courtroom where they very cleverly made the argument for why having something like this isn't entirely stupid. It's set up almost to poke fun at the idea of this, but at the same time they're saying, look, you know, if we did this right, there are many, many things that we could benefit from as a culture, as a society. So it pulls its punches slightly, Ashmin. I think that maybe that's what you're saying, is that, you know, it could almost be a complete attack on the whole idea of it, versus something that's trying to be a little bit more intelligent.
Yeah. So I think that's actually a great point, Joe. And I think for me personally, the highs and lows the delta between the highs and lows aren't big enough so that the payoff is as large. But, you know, again, I think if you like this type of humor and you like Steve Carell, it's worth a watch. Certainly give it a watch. It's not a waste of your time.
Okay.
Next on the list, I guess, was Filthy Rich Jeffrey Epstein, which I believe is coming out very soon.
Yes, that actually releases, depending on when you put this out, Joe, that this one releases literally on the 27th of May. And this is actually a 4-episode limited edition docuseries. This is incredible. If you are like me and you like conspiracy theories and you are fascinated by the very, very upper echelons of the rich and wealthy and how they live their lives, and I'm talking more than, you know, the series that used to come on MTV or the E! Channel, you know, this is a really good exploration into what was basically a Ponzi sexual pyramid scheme of victims. It starts off very disturbing and frightening, and it does a really good job of questioning the whole concept of kind of quid pro quo, right? For people who are desperate and hungry to succeed. And, you know, often the lines get blurred when you're dancing with the devil, and Jeffrey Epstein is the devil in my mind. There's a great quote in here by Carl Hyerson, who's a columnist for the Miami Herald, who had basically started exploring this whole story because Jeffrey Epstein had a hideaway, a victim's lair, so to speak, in Florida. And basically, you know, the quote is, if you have enough money, you can buy your way into any society. And that is basically the crux of this whole very important docuseries that, you know, really looks at how the victims were, you know, deceived into coming into this devil's lair, into hell. And sure, you know, you can say that they got money for what they did, but I don't think anyone who is underage or who is even close to just at the age of consent has the know-how or the forethought to truly understand what they're getting into. And so it does a really good job of being focused on the victims and their stories and how they were convinced to kind of be a part of this scheme and why they stayed and how they stayed and who they were trafficked to. It does a really good job of staying focused on them versus who Jeffrey Epstein, the monster, was. And normally I would say that was not a good use of time. I wanted to know more about Jeffrey Epstein in this case, but this was a very satisfying exploration at how what happened. I don't know if it delves as much into, will we ever be able to stop this again? But it's shocking. This is a shocking, very relevant docuseries, and I urge everyone to watch it who has an interest in, you know, crime thrillers or documentaries about just how the justice system works or doesn't work, and how the justice system, and I said this during one of the podcasts for the state versus Melissa, the state of Texas versus Melissa. It was one of the Tribeca documentaries that I watched. But this is actually a great juxtaposition to that, which is if you have money, you can buy yourself not into any society, but you can buy yourself out of any trouble too. That's how it comes across. So I think it's just very focused. And again, Joe, I think this was one way you maybe even watched a couple of the episodes with me, more than kind of over my shoulder. Yeah.
No, I did. I watched most of it. I think maybe I missed the first episode, but the rest of it I did kind of see. So just to kind of add to what you said, I mean, I think this is definitely required viewing for anyone who has any interest in seeing society protect its most vulnerable. I mean, you know, this is the darkness of all of this. It's just how complicit so many people were in terms of seeing very clearly what was happening here. And even if you weren't necessarily involved in some sort of passive way, when a guy has a reputation for flying to his private island with a bunch of 15-year-old girls for years on end, and no one seems to say anything. I mean, that's the ultimate kind of, you know, passivity from the public. Never mind when you go deeper, the fact that he had various people in various positions of power in his pocket, such that when he finally gets busted for this, you know, they don't bust him for any sort of underage sex. They bust him for effectively solicitation versus, you know, the real crimes. And so the, you know, as you kind of probe around the story, it becomes very, very disturbing as to just how much influence, money, and that kind of power can allow somebody to get away with the scale of crimes. And everyone's involved. I mean, you know, there are high-level politicians, there are members of the royal family in the UK, you know, and these are politicians on both sides. There are public officials of all sorts. So, you know, in many ways, I didn't know as much about this story as Rashmi has. You know, you followed this along in New York Times and various other news sources as it kind of happened. I didn't really pay too much attention to this. So as an exploration of all of that, I think this does a really good job. I do feel that, like you, Rashmi, I wanted to understand the sociopath a little bit more. I wanted to understand, you know, there was a couple of instances where he essentially feels like he's an innocent person, not because, you know, as any criminal does, they kind of rationalize a bit their behavior, but he really thinks that he paid these girls to do a job. You know, they were all paid well, they were all given, you know, gifts and, you know, lifestyle of private jets and beaches in exchange for horrific things. And, you know, he picked them young because they were too naive to know any better.
So what I don't understand is why underage, right? I mean, maybe that's why, maybe because they were naive that they didn't know any better, because, you know, he could have run a legal prostitution system or a legal escort system. Yeah.
He's a paedophile, yes, Dean. He's a paedophile, and there's no other way of kind of trying to rationalize that. I mean, you know, the fact that he went for these, you know, very young girls, with him it's a bit more insidious. There was an attraction to girls that were much younger than the age of consent, and there was a circle of people within his web that were also very attracted to those girls that were underage. And so, you know, it wasn't just the naivety and, you know, lifting them out of what he believed to be impoverished circumstances. I mean, that's how you exploit people. But it was, you know, long and short of it, he was a paedophile. Yeah. And but he could have set up, you know, a kind
high
of
class
a,
escort,
a,
yeah, high
a
class
prostitution
escort
ring.
Agency.
Yeah, you know, where it's still exploitation, but, you know, if, you know, there are people willing to work in that line of work because of, you know, whatever reason, you know, that's a choice that adults can make. You know, I'm not against that, you know, he could have done this legally, but that wasn't his interest.
Yeah, and I think,
and I wanted a deeper dive into that.
I think the other piece about this is it's a beautifully crafted, well-told story that, you know, is essentially a story that's not done yet. It's done because he supposedly committed suicide, and it delves into a bit of that.
Right.
But, you know, it's a story that still has an ending in my mind. So the way that the it's again, very nicely paced over the four episodes, a lot of good information, riveting. And again, I'll say again, if you like crime thrillers, then this is a really good piece of, I mean, I hate to call it entertainment because it's about people who've suffered horribly, but in terms of something that documents what's happened, very well done. Really, really superior docu-series.
Okay.
Okay. So, Joe, did you want to jump to some of the Amazon Prime?
Sure, yes. You haven't had, Rashmi and I have been blabbing away here. You picked a couple of things from Amazon Prime.
I was especially interested to hear about Homecoming, which has Janelle Monáe, who I know you are a big fan of, both musically and acting-wise.
Mm-hmm. So all three recommendations that I'm going to make for Amazon Prime, I happened to come by them not because I was, you know, looking around on Amazon Prime and ran into them. In each instance, I was in one way or the other referred to those. So let me start with the first one, which is Perez. So here at the San Diego area, we have the San Diego Italian Film Festival. And in light of the pandemic, what they've been doing is every week they pick one Italian movie, and then you pay just $4.50 or so, and you can watch the movie. And every Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock, anybody who has watched the movie can meet for a discussion. And they've been doing, originally started off just as a discussion, but of late they've started being able to pull in the director of the movie to call in. In this case, it was the scriptwriter of the movie who called in. So, you know, they've been able to, because everybody is at home, right, with the pandemic. So it's become quite something. And so this movie, Perez, was recommended two Sundays ago, or maybe it was the last Sunday, by the San Diego Italian Film Festival. And I would recommend it to everyone. It's streaming right now on Amazon Prime. And it's the story of a man who was a very promising, litigator who happened to fall into bad times. And now he's pretty much, you know, lost all interest in his life as a lawyer. And he is, you know, down to defending low-life criminals, you know, for a job. And the movie is kind of set into action by virtue of the fact that he realizes that his daughter, who he loves a lot, and she's about 17 years of age, has fallen in love with a major gangster kind of person, you know, really kind of a nasty mafia person. And you know how young love is, that, you know, his daughter will not listen. And the more he tells her, you know, the more, you know, emboldened she is to kind of go with this man. And it's very interesting from two perspectives. One is that the main character is so, so passive. I mean, he is kind of completely lost from the very beginning, like his zest for life. And even as he's watching his daughter kind of self-destruct, he's doing his best, but he's kind of doing it very passively. And the movie kind of gets embroiled in this whole mafia trying to save his daughter, essentially. And his daughter, the more he does it, the more angrier his daughter gets. So it's a very nice story about morality and doing the right thing, even if there is no appreciation for it. And what I really want to recommend this movie is, it came out about 3 years ago, but honestly, it's some of the best cinematography that I've seen in a long, long time. I mean, this movie is like, my God, it's like candy for your eyes. I mean, there's just incredible scenes. The place where he works looks like something out of, you know, the future, and it's like there's very few people walking. It almost seems like another planet. I mean, there are a lot of the movies shot in the dark, in the night, and the lighting is impeccable. I mean, every scene can be framed. I mean, I just was so amazed by the visual look of the movie. So the name of the movie is Perez. It's the name of the lead character. It's kind of a mafia movie, but a great visual flair. So that's the first movie I want to recommend.
And it's available on Prime, which is fantastic. It's available on Prime,
yeah, for free, yeah. The second movie I want to recommend is one that was recommended by New York Times. So I subscribe to New York Times, and they've been doing a really good job with very frequent recommendations on what you should and should not watch. And last week, they published a dialogue between their two lead film critics, Manolo Jargis and A.O. Scott. And they had gone back to reconsidering a very famous Peter Bogdanovich movie called What's Up, Doc? This movie came out in the early 70s, and I remembered vaguely watching it as a child, but I had no recollection from it. And they were both, I read that article, and they were both making the case about it's exactly the kind of movie we need right now. It's the kind of movie that people don't seem to be making, but it's fun, but it's beautifully made, and it holds up really well. And it stars a very young Ryan O'Neill and a very young Barbara Streisand. And it's one of these goofy caper movies. The movie itself is very much inspired by the old Cary Grant and Katharine Hepburn movie called Bringing Up Baby. And it's essentially about this kind of nebbishy, nerdy guy who doesn't know, you know, that he's nerdy and nebbishy, but this woman who comes into his life, and the woman just completely blows his life to smithereens. She's a walking time bomb. Everything she does, she ruins things around him. And it's hilarious. I mean, if there's one reason people need to watch What's Up, Doc, it's for Madeleine Kahn. And Madeleine Kahn died about a few years ago. She was in a lot of Mel Brooks movies. She was in a lot of Peter Bogdanovich movies, including Paper Moon, but she plays Ryan O'Neill's very quiet, very proper, very stifled kind of girlfriend. And she's horrified that this other woman has come and kind of in front of her eyes is trying to steal her boyfriend away from her. And it's got amazing set pieces, slapstick humor. There is intrigue. There is spies. There is an amazing car. Car chase scene, thank you, running through the streets of San Francisco. It's completely shot live in the early 70s. It's a marvel of mechanics and just orchestration of everything. It's fun in 2 hours. I had so much fun watching it. I would recommend it to everyone. It's kind of cute and sexy and funny and just very, very entertaining. So,
Yasti, what does this have? The What's Up, Doc? You know, that's a very famous line in a Bugs Bunny cartoon that we'll all recognize. Is there any connection to that? Or
there is. I mean, he plays this this professor of metals. So he's kind of a famous PhD who knows about geology and metals and so forth. And for no apparent reason, this woman kind of latches on to him. And the first thing she tells him is, hey, what's up, Doc? You know, like, because he's a doc in metal. So I think they've just used the Bugs Bunny piece to make it funny. But it's just, they don't make movies like that anymore. It's so wonderfully written.
Okay, great. We'll have to add that to our list, Joe.
Definitely. And then the last thing I want to recommend, I happen to listen to Fresh Air, the podcast on NPR all the time. And Terry Gross interviews a whole bunch of very, very interesting people. And she happened to interview Janelle Monáe, who I liked from before because she's done amazing work, both in film as well as mostly in music. And that was a fascinating interview. It's a very honest, frank discussion that Janelle Monáe had, and it made me watch Homecoming. So the second season is out, and I've seen the first three episodes so far, and the second episode very much seems like a Bourne identity kind of issue. It's about this person who wakes up out of amnesia in the middle of a lake on a boat with no one around, and she cannot remember who she is. But as she's moving, as she starts interacting, she realizes that she used to be a very, very sought after, intelligent person. And the series plays out in the sense of she needs to find out who she is because she cannot remember things. So,
and Yasti, remind me, had you seen Homecoming season one? Wasn't that the one with Julia Roberts?
Yes, I had. So for those who have not watched season one, it's a pretty, it's very well made, very well directed. It's about, so Julia Roberts in that played kind of a psychologist who kind of interviews and helps soldiers who have come back from war and who have had very serious PTSD. And as the series moved along, it became very obvious. You're never really sure what anybody's motives are, but it becomes obvious that what's at play here is that there is some kind of a company which has developed this tool to wipe off the memories of people.
But they're not connected, right?
They are connected in that... in the second season, you find out that she has some connection with that same company. It's called Geist, G-E-I-S-T. I think it's only peripherally connected, but it has nothing to do. So far, I've only seen the first three episodes. It has nothing to do with the Julia Roberts character at all. Yeah, but it's very well made. I would like, considering the dilemma that this lead character is in, I would have liked her to be more shocked and more kind of introspective, trying to understand where she is at. But the action is moving so quickly in this that things move very fast. And I think they just wanted to do something clippy and fast so that they don't lose the interest of the viewers. So I understand that it's only half an hour episodes and plays out very well. So certainly would recommend that just based on the first three episodes. So, yeah.
Excellent.
And then, go on.
All right. Go ahead.
I was going to mention, I also happened to stumble upon two things on YouTube, of all places. And I know, Joe, you've mentioned before that you spend more time on YouTube than almost any other platform on the internet. I watch a lot of clips and I watch a lot of late night TV clips on YouTube and so forth. But there were two things I happened to stumble upon. One is after I watched the Janelle Monáe interview, I was reminded that her last studio album, or the last major commercial album, which came out, was 2 years ago, and it was called Dirty Computer. And what she did was that she's got some amazing songs, and you know, a lot, she developed that while she was interacting with Prince, you know, and then Prince unfortunately died, and so you know, she felt the need to carry on. So a lot of it is very, you know, Prince inspired, but
his fingerprints are all
over it. That's the first thing that Joe had told me as soon as he listened to the album. He was like, "My God, there's such a lot of Prince on this," which we love, both of us love, you know. Yeah.
So the good thing is that they also developed a 45-minute kind of loosely adapted video to go along with every single song in Dirty Computer, and every song has a video with it, and they've pieced it all together as a sci-fi futuristic tale where people are trying to take away the identity of this woman. So it's only 45 minutes. It's on YouTube. It's on the YouTube's Vevo, V-E-V-O channel, which has a lot of the original music videos of actors. It really plays very well. So I would recommend that if somebody has only 45 minutes. It's called Dirty Computer. And again,
it's interesting actually, because as I was listening to the album, I probably only cottoned onto the album a few months ago. I think, Rashmi, when we were traveling sometime late last year,
those were the days.
I kind of downloaded it.
Yeah.
I know, right? But I think we were on a long haul flight somewhere. I didn't want to watch movies. I was in that, you know, weird, you know, transatlantic head space that one tends to fall into, and so I put the music on. It's a very self-contained piece of art as an album. Like it has a story to tell, and it's it made me think at the time that it would be a great audio visual experience. So I'm kind of really intrigued by that.
It's very short.
Multi-talented, right? I mean, I don't think she's quite had her day yet. I mean, she probably made her breakout in Hidden Figures.
She did her breakout
2 years ago. But I think her time is yet to come.
Yeah. And then she was also, of course, in Moonlight, if you remember.
Yes.
Isn't that as well?
But
yeah.
It didn't seem as a bigger part.
No, really. It wasn't a big part. No.
Yeah.
And then she's been in a lot of movies since then. She was in that Steve Carell movie, Welcome to Marvin Call, I think. Remember that?
Oh, I movie. Don't think that yeah. got... Yeah.
Yeah, she was in that as well. But yeah, so on YouTube.
She was definitely in the front of the line when it came to
yes.
God handing out talents. I mean,
yeah.
She's ridiculous. Musical, she can act,
if she can dance, can sing. She's kind of Jennifer Lopez in the making.
Yeah, and she actually, this last year's Oscars, if you remember, she started off the Oscars, you know, with
yes.
the opening number. And she is always... Mm-hmm. It's interesting on her interview. She said she loves a gritty, you know, back of your garage kind of a rap track. And she loves classical music as much. And she was feeling sad because she had planned this whole, she was going to do a live show with an orchestra at Hollywood Bowl in June. And of course, it's not going to happen because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
But, you know, even some of her early albums, they have like full on orchestral tracks. So she has a really good sense of music, and she can pull things from different musical genres. Okay, I'm sorry I've been talking a lot. There's one other thing I want to mention on YouTube. So as I mentioned many, many times, my one salve during the whole pandemic was watching The Great British Baking Show, which for some unforeseen, unexplainable reason brings me great comfort. I just like watching it. So the two main, what's the word?
Host?
The two main hosts, thank you, thank you, Rashmi, who can read my mind. The host of the show.
It's been 10 years, Yasti. Not this podcast, but, you know.
Yes, yes. I'll be quick. It's Noel Gallagher and Sandy Tokwik.
Noel Gallagher of Oasis, which made me laugh.
No, no, it's not.
It is?
No, no,
this
it's
is not.
Not.
Is it not.
This is not. No, this is some. So I was very curious about the Sandy Tokwik, and I found out to my great surprise that during the pandemic, while Sandy was, she's of Danish origin, although she grew up in the U.S.
And funnily enough, Yasti, she was actually very famous in the 90s and early 2000s for being on Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Yes.
So the British version of,
in the U.K.
And she's very funny.
She's very, very funny. And so while she has been quarantined like the rest of us, what she has done is she has created little 10 or 15 minute videos that she posts on YouTube. A lot of people have been doing it. John Krasinski and Emily Blunt have been doing, you know, their thing.
Except
a lot
they
of
got picked up.
Right. It got picked up by CBS, right.
Yes.
So
some
she
good
does,
news.
Yes.
And good news for them also.
Good, really good news. Monetarily good news. So Sandy Tokwik has been doing these 10 or 15 minute little videos where she does a deep dive into literature or history or something that happened in British culturally. And she talks for 15 minutes about it. And she talks about the first woman to ever go out as a soldier in Britain. She talks about the first, you know, she talks about why certain things are the way they are and the history behind it. And it's completely things you've never heard. It's very, very, very British and proper and as cerebral as it gets. But again, it's like, it's wonderful just for 15 minutes to listen to her talk about something you never knew. And she opens like old, you know, 18th century books, and she talks, this page refers to this, and there was a knight, and he's known to have killed a dragon, and it's just so fascinating. And
so yes, I have to say, you're not making it sound very exciting, but I do know Sandy Tokwik, and she is very, very funny.
Yes.
So for those of you who haven't watched The Great British Baking Show, even though Yazdi's review doesn't make it sound so riveting,
it is riveting.
Watch it.
It does. No, Rashmi, I disagree with you there.
Watches, you know, Marvels. What they called? What are they called? Those Marvel shows. Joe will watch
Modern Marvels, History Channel.
How paint is made. So again, for me, Yasti, I'm just saying to our listeners who are kind of like, you know, Sandy Toksvig is worth it, so give it a check.
Yes, and it's called the Vox Talks, V-O-X-T-O-X.
Vox Talks.
Right, like talks, okay. Like talks. T-A-L-K-S, only it's called talks. There's a whole bunch of them on YouTube.
Is it anything to do with the Vox News channel?
It may. Maybe that. Okay. Maybe she's doing it for Vox.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know why it's called Vox Talks, but highly entertaining.
But she's highly entertaining. 10 minutes of your time. She could. She could talk about 8 minutes. You know, word processing, and it would be like a really entertaining video. So there's a couple more things on Netflix, Rashmi, I think we wanted to cover.
Yeah, so Lovebirds. Lovebirds is the movie with Issa Rae and Kumail Nanji, which unfortunately the timing of it was that it came out on the cinema, just got a release, then we went into quarantine, and so they made the wise decision to have Lovebirds go straight to Netflix.
No.
Have I told it completely wrong?
It was coming to... Well, the facts are right, but the details are a little off in that it was about to... No. It was about to be released. It was heavily promoted for movie theatre release. Because the pandemic arrived, okay, it never got its release. And so the producers obviously were wondering, well, they've done all this work promoting it. How do they get a return on investment? Given that we don't know when theatres are going to open again, there might not be a good window for this movie to open once things do, because everything is going to get crammed together. So they did a deal with Netflix for immediate online distribution. And, you know, there's a couple of different ways they could have done it. They could have charged a fee for, you know, rental or... But no, they went with Netflix, and Netflix presumably wrote them a fat enough
good
check
old Netflix
to be worthwhile.
So, Joe, what did you think of it?
So it's now available.
And given that we are lovebirds, what did you think of it?
So, well, after the way you've been talking about me and my love for the History Channel, I'm not sure.
No, it's Modern Marvels.
Yeah, there we go. Anyway, yes, dear. So, the movie. So here's what I say. It succeeds in spite of itself, right? So this is it's a terrific movie to watch on Netflix. Had I gone to the movie theater to watch this, I think I might have come away a little bit annoyed by, you know, the whole having to, you know, spend $20 a ticket and, you know, take out an evening of my time. Instead, we watched it very casually over Memorial Day weekend on the couch at home, and it's the kind of movie that is brainless fun. It doesn't even try to be plausible, right? So there are some concessions it makes, you know, where there's a scene where they have to be appropriately dressed for a party, and they just happen to be at their friend's apartment, and they go, hey, can we borrow some clothes? You know, and their friends just happen to have ball gowns and tuxedos and dress shoes in all of the appropriate sizes. They don't even pretend that this
it's
situation
actually funny
needs
as you're
to
describing
be resolved
it,
more intelligently.
Right? That's actually funny.
So it's full of those little kind of nonsensical concessions. But at the same time, as a showcase for the leads, it's terrifically good. I'm not a huge fan of Kumail.
Yeah, me neither.
Nanjiani,
yeah.
I find his tone is a little off. He comes across weirdly as arrogant and full of himself, and he doesn't get away from that here, but it kind of suits the character quite well, because, you know, despite the movie's name, The Lovebirds, you know, these people don't like each other very much for the most of the movie. So that kind of, you know, sneery attitude tends to play in his favour. And Issa Rae, this is the first time I'm actually seeing her in anything that I can recall as a lead. I missed the other movie that I think, The Photograph, Yazdi, that you mentioned she was in.
She's very good in it.
So... she was a delight to watch in this movie. She's very funny. She's very on point. Her comedic timing is right. And even though these jokes aren't great jokes, the two of them kind of vibing off each other worked really well for me. So overall, I thought this was totally worth its while. Again, I'm so glad it's a Netflix movie, because it makes it very easy to recommend. Watch it for a few minutes. If it's not making you giggle, turn it off, find something else. But you'll probably find that you'll want to persevere and find out what ultimately becomes of these two.
Yeah, exactly what Joe said. It's completely predictable from the first, you know, from the second scene in, you know exactly how it's going to turn out. But it doesn't take away from how fun this is and the sense of fun that these two are having doing the movie. And there are some really funny laugh out loud moments, even though it's so implausible and ridiculous as a premise. And Joe, you said it, it's very akin to the Steve Carell, Tina Fey movie called Date Night that came out maybe 4 or 5 years ago. It's just a caper and it's super fun. Oh, I love that
movie, yeah.
But it lacks the intelligence of Date Night.
It's not as smart. It's not as smart, but it's as funny, so to speak.
That's exactly right. It's as funny, yeah, but not as smart. And I think that's kind of a
yeah,
great
and it's literally of 90 minutes. It's very efficient. It's really no investment, and it is a perfect Sunday night as you get ready for work on Monday movie.
Hmm. Okay.
Very easy to watch. Really liked it. Joe, what's next on our list?
The other one I had was #BlackAF.
Right.
So this came recommended by a couple of friends of ours. You know, we hadn't... I'd seen it, you know, huge fan of...
Rashida Jones.
You know, she's just a delight to watch on screen. Very funny, very witty. You know, we loved her in Parks and Rec and the other stuff.
Again, someone who's very talented.
Mm-hmm.
Not just because of her last name.
Yeah.
So that, along with a friend's recommendation, was kind of reason enough for us to check this out. And, you know, I'll just jump in with my opinion on it, Rashmi, and then I'll let you talk, which was it took a little to warm up to this, I must admit. I'm not familiar with Blackish, and I think to people who enjoy the TV show Blackish, I understand that there's, you know, some definite follow-on references to that. That wasn't where I came from. I came at this with kind of fresh eyes and fresh no preconceived ideas about it. With that said, a couple of episodes into it, I think I started to click into their particular brand of humor and what they were specifically aiming to do here. And it's a very funny, you know, I come from, you know, a mixed race, half black background. And so it's a very interesting take on race, what it is to be black in America, what it is to be successful and black in America, what is to have kind of the legacy of black history in this country. So in the middle of every episode, there's a 2 or 3 minute segment where they kind of get serious on you, and either one of the characters has, you know, a monologue about, you know, the history of slavery and why that led to certain aspects of black culture being what they are today. Or, you know, we have like a little bit of time out. The only thing that irritated me about it is it keeps doing this, you know, reality TV type.
Like Modern Family.
Presentation.
Like the Modern Family.
Oh.
It's like Modern... Yeah, it's as if, you know, the setup is that one of the daughters of the family is doing a documentary for a high school project. And so she has cameras and interviews and offside. I think there are better ways these days of trying to introduce characters' thoughts and, you know, sidebars rather than this constant, you know, pretending it's a reality show thing, because I was a little tired of that. But overall, I think it's definitely worth watching.
Yeah, definitely worth a watch. I can't say it's grabbed me 100% yet. I haven't quite bought into it, but I love watching this group of people acting together and this beautiful house that they live in. There are moments of really laugh out loud funny, and I do like the injection of the history, the black history in a sense. That's quite powerful. It's yet to really win me over. I'm not, again, it's not something I say every evening when, you know, when we've had our dinner and we're ready to watch something. Hey, let's watch Black AF. But it's always good to dip in and out of. I think, yes, you used to say that about 30 Rock a lot, right?
Yeah.
If you're not watching anything, you can just dip in and out. And then before you know it, you've watched like 6 episodes of it for the
easily
last 3 hours of your evening. I don't think it's that compelling yet. But I do like what I'm seeing, and I think there is room for this family to be represented on Netflix. So,
and how many episodes are there?
I think it's already up to season 2.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Not sure. I'll look it up right now.
No, I think it's season 1, and I think there's, you know, 6, 8 episodes, something like that. It almost feels like within each 40 to 50 minute episode, there's a great 15 to 20 minute episode ready to burst out. It just... But nonetheless, I mean, I find myself recommending it simply because it has enough entertainment value and enough, you know, underlying commentary that shows just how sharp the concept is. Never mind, you know, despite the execution. And Rashida Jones is great. She's so good. All right. I think that's it. I think we have covered what we had intended to in this podcast. So thank you again for listening. We hope that these streaming pick episodes are of some use. We've been watching everything kind of with a view to talking about it. So, we will continue to do that, even if it's a while before we can go back out into the world. So, thank you, everybody, for listening.
Thank you. I'm sure everybody has been watching a lot of streaming content online themselves. And if you have any good recommendations for us or our viewers, we always welcome your input.
Yes, please let us know what you're watching and what we should be watching.
Yeah.
I think Netflix has had a serious boon with all of this, although you know, I would imagine that their costs of distribution have gone up with people watching so much online. So I know our cable modem has certainly had smoke pouring from it with all the streaming we've been doing. Okay, too many movies, too little time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.
We've got lots of your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, online streaming. Wow.